With the first pick in the 2019 NBA Draft, the New Orleans Pelicans select Zion Williamson from Duke University.
Get on the take. Drew Holiday on the reverse.
All right, Tyler, we're back finally. I appreciate you stepping away from Hogwarts for a second to talk about the Pelicans, because what a 2023 it's been.
You know what I just thought of as soon as you said what a 2023 it's been? Every season's a fucking roller coaster with the Pelicans.
Every season.
And excuse my French, but I legitimately mean both fucking and roller coaster. So I had to get that out there.
It's
we can't never, like, this felt like, I think everybody, that's why there's a lot of frustration this season. Everybody thought this was the season, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think Phoenix Suns game capitalized that so much, and then, you know, a couple losses happening, no big deal. Then they start stacking up, and then you're like, what the hell is going on? And then you're just watching us slide down the Western Conference. And now we're back to eighth in the West again. And it's like, wow, here we are again. Here we are again. Once again, fighting for the eighth seed. It's like things never change.
Yeah, man. It's every even before this era, it felt like that was the case, right?
That was the AD era.
I mean, the AD era, even the
Tony.
Man, I mean, the CP3 era, dude. Like, we had that one good season, and it just felt like we were kind of going up and down with him, with those erroneous trades that we made back then. But yeah, man, AD era, it's like we get hyped up, this is the year, and then injuries happen, or something along those lines. Drew Holiday has a stress fracture, or Tyreek Evans.
It's injury related almost every
time. It's always injury related. I mean, I get it. I get the everybody gets injured, right? Like, you can almost say that across every team, but It feels like our injuries are just more significant.
No, can we talk about that? Because it's like, you know, I think people are finally just like, longtime fans of this team are just so frustrated because they finally, like, enough. Like, at some point, it's almost like the insanity phase or something like that, because at some point you realize, hey, it's not even a pattern anymore. It's what's going to happen. It's
right.
It's not like bad luck. It's like, this is what we are. Our superstars get hurt every single year, no matter who it is, you know? Chris Paul, Anthony Davis, DeMarcus Cousins, Drew Holiday, Zion Williamson, Brandon Ingram. Every single one's going to get hurt.
Yeah, and I think, like, that's got to be, like, the overarching theme of this season in general right now, right? Like, I know a lot of people, like, the hot topic right now is, like, the trade deadline, and we're not good enough to improve. People are blaming Willie Green. We'll talk about all that stuff eventually. But, I mean, dude, Tyler, we say this over and over again, but I really do think it's this simple. If our main guys aren't our main guys, we're not going to win games.
That's exactly what it is. That's why, you know, the 10 games is enough to where, okay, Willie, you got to figure something out. You got to right the ship. That the worst teams in the league don't normally lose 10 games. We didn't lose 10 games straight all last season. You know,
right.
And it was a lot worse. So, you know, that's not fully on us not having stars available. That a part of that was team roster issue. But that, you know, that also comes because these guys are so used to, I mean, it really showed the impact Zion had on the team. It was incredible. As soon as he went out, I mean, I think, like, the offense has just completely gone off a cliff since Zion's been gone. And whether, you know, you want to put some blame on Willie or certain players or young players or some of the veterans, whoever it is, I think they're all to blame in some aspect. But it's apparent that this team is not going to be good without its best players. Surprise, surprise, like any other team in the NBA. I don't know why that's a shocker to anybody, but I mean, I think you said it. If Zion comes back and plays when he's supposed to play, he will have only played 52 games a season.
Mm-hmm.
And BI is somewhere in the mid-40s if he plays the rest of the season. Like,
yeah.
I mean, you're telling a team to hold off half a season without its best players. That's LA Clippers stuff. Like, that's what we are, you know?
Yeah, and I think the biggest issue with this for me is, like, this team is kind of built around Zion and Brandon Ingram's strengths, right? Like, the idea that we have those two on the court kind of yinging and yanging, and when they're out on the court, it's obviously other people play better. The defense is so focused on B.I. and Zion that these other guys play their roles extremely well.
Yep.
So when you take those two guys out and you're asking these other players to step up, it's not fair at all, in my opinion, to expect big things from those guys. Now, to defend a little, I'll defend the naysayers a little bit about this team. And if you have a team with CJ and Jonas Valanciunas along with our role players, you probably are a play-in team. So the drought 10 probably should not have happened, and there's a lot of blame going around. But at the same time, it's like every other team in this league, if they lost their best two players, probably won't make the play-in game.
Yeah.
Like, they're not anywhere near a playoff team. Like, I can't really think of a team that's built with such depth that if they lost their two best players for damn near 40 games apiece, that they would even sniff the play-in. I mean, you got to think, you know, I don't even want to speculate at this point in time, because I can't think of a team off the top of my head that has that amount of depth and is that good. So I do think this team is built extremely well. I do think this team is built to contend for a championship as constructed. I don't think we'll ever sniff that if Zion and Brandon Ingram, like you said, continue to miss 40 to 50% of our games on average every year.
Yeah. I mean, so it's funny, like, if there's anyone to really blame for this season, the people I feel like that should get the least amount of blame is the front office.
Yeah.
I mean, there's obviously was a lot of anger at the trade deadline, but, you know, we discussed it pretty in depth, but I don't think they made any wrong moves at the trade deadline. Like, you know, they took the best deal available. We'll talk about that later, but I mean, the front office put a good roster around the two best players.
Yeah.
No one can argue that. I mean, people are like, oh, you know, oh, this team's real deep now, That's not what – I don't think anyone means when they mean depth. They're like, oh, this is a championship team when our two best players are hurt. No one means that. It's depth because, hey, you're not just relying on a top-heavy lineup. You have a great bench unit. And the stats do show that we do have a good bench unit. We do have good role players. We have guys who excel at home like traditional role players usually do in the NBA. So, I mean, kudos to the front office. And they're doing it with look. And, like, a lot of these guys get crucified at the stake lately. Like, I've seen people get on Trey Murphy. I've seen people get on Dyson Daniels. And, you know, some of your more popular blog boys out there and stuff like that. But not to get too in the weeds. But, I mean, these are 19, 20, 21, 22, 23-year-old players. Like,
right.
How much of the load can you expect them to carry? Like, and people are like, well, either they're going to be there or they're going to be not. Well, no, these guys are not going to be superstars. And they weren't meant to be. They weren't drafted to be. And, you know, like, our highest draft pick is besides Zion, is Jackson Hayes and Dyson. Now, you can obviously say there's a miss on Jackson Hayes, but
right.
No one's going to be perfect in the draft. There's no team that is. They wish. I mean, look at Golden State. You know, lands Steph Curry, Clay, and Draymond Green, and they're trying to trade Andrew Wiseman if that goes through. You know,
yeah.
You're not ever going to always land a player in the draft. It's a crapshoot. But to blame these guys for that, that's too much. That's too much to put on these guys. The fact that Dyson Daniels could come in and contribute day one is amazing.
Yeah, it's man. Incredible. This is the this is the first two talking points that we wanted to talk about today on this episode. We're already 10 minutes in, but just to kind of label what we want to talk about, the first two topics we wanted to talk about was the loudest of Pelicans fans are in the minority, I feel like, compared to what the majority say. And the second thing we wanted to talk about was the 10-game losing streak. So a lot of this stuff came out during the 10-game losing streak, man. All these very weird hot takes that were being screamed at us on almost every popular podcast. I mean, Jake Madison, I think, did a really good job kind of calming everybody down with his podcast.
Yeah, I agree.
But, I mean, you know, you listen to Pro Pels talk, and now give them credit, dude. They do got a few level-headed guys on there. But, man, via Twitter and via their podcast, just screaming these just, like, really ridiculous things at our team. And one of those things was, like, we can't draft, and David Griffin has terrible asset management, and we have a bunch of first-round players. Why are we not good? It's like, dude, the Houston Rockets have 5 first-round picks starting, and, like, 4 of them were picked in, like, the top 10 or whatever it was.
Yep.
You know, like, that's not – draft picks aren't indications of future success. You know, so that correlation to me is a very faulty correlation, and I think there's a lot of – bad logic behind that line of thought that just because Jackson Hayes was taken 8th, he should be great by now. No, I mean, that's not accurate at all.
No.
Like you said, the 2nd overall pick, James Wiseman, is trying to get traded for pennies on the dollar. And I know the understanding behind
Ben
that
Simmons,
is
Simmons, the number 1 overall pick, is what is he? Does he even belong in the NBA?
He's like the worst player in the NBA right now. So, like, yeah, and I understand we don't want to compare ourselves to these other teams, but you're talking about good teams, man. You're talking about teams who do well. You're talking about teams, Brooklyn, Philadelphia, Golden State. You're talking about franchises that were winning at a very high rate. So, man, even the best franchises struggle heavily in the draft, you know, because it is kind of a crapshoot.
Joel, but they also drafted Jahlil Okafor. Where is he at?
Yeah, you know, and they traded all those picks. You know, they traded a lot of picks to move up and take Markel Fultz when they could have had Jason Tatum at number 3. So, you know, it's a very, I don't know, man. It's a very easy game to play.
Yeah.
After the fact. To yes. just say we're bad at handling assets. We don't know what we're doing. You know, David Griffin's bad at his job. He has, and one of the absolute funniest lines to me was, who was given more than David Griffin than when he got Zion Williamson and Brandon Ingram and all these picks? It's just
so funny to me. It's like, okay, he was given more, and like, it's not like he fell off a bus. We were competing for the 1 seed when our superstars were healthy.
Like, yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, yeah, he was given a lot, and we were the number 1 seed. You know what I'm saying? Like, we had it rolling. Like, we were the best team in the West, and we looked like the best team in the West. And then we got hurt. It's like, I don't know what David Griffin or our front office has to do. I think they've collected a lot of talent. But again, a lot of that talent fits in extremely well with Zion and Brandon Ingram.
Yep.
So that was like the worst thing about the drought 10, man, was there was so much blame going around. It just felt
so much emotion and fear mongering and like that, and just like, oh, y'all don't know what y'all talking about. Like, we know basketball. It's like, no. Like, you're not going to. Like, the straw man arguments that are made are just ridiculous at this point, I feel like, in the Pelicans
base.
And it's gotta calm down. Like, guys like Jake Madison, who's old enough and been around long enough. Old. Sorry if he ever.
No, but he's been doing this job for long enough that he knows that he's not going to overreact like that.
And, like, he knows he's seen enough of the NBA. Like, look, it's a long-ass season. Like, it's going to, like, that's what it is. Like, who are you going to blame? The only people you can really blame is the stars getting hurt, and it's not like we're blaming them like, oh, F you got injured. Like, you know, I'm sure they wouldn't want to get injured, but like, hey, we got to figure out what they're doing to constantly get hurt. And if that is what they're going to be, then we have to start building the team differently. We might even have to, you know, and this is one point that I don't agree with, where, you know, look at trade BI or something like that. But if you come to the understanding that they're going to constantly be hurt, then you need to go find a way to get a healthy superstar. And
right.
if you got to trade one of them to do that, that might end up being a conversation down the road. But You can't make that right now when Zion's 22, B.I.'s 25, about to turn 26. You can't do that right now. You can't do that right now.
No, I think, I think our best chances moving forward are in the hands of you're right. Like, we're hoping that a 25-year-old and a 22-year-old take care of their body. You know, now, by all indications, they want to, but you're right. That might be a tough conversation we have later on, but to jump to that conclusion, or to really jump to any conclusions after this season is very, I don't know, man. It seems very myopic. It seems very short-sighted. It feels like you can't see. It's emotional, and it feels like you can't see the forest through the trees right now. You're just looking at what's in front of you and what's not in the future. And we have a lot to be excited about. And when I talk to a lot of people with really good basketball knowledge that aren't peddling podcasts, which is kind of ironic because we're on a podcast right now. But when I do talk about these I know we don't peddle shit though, dude. Like, we don't advertise. We don't do shit. We literally do this, to quote you, Tyler, to pop the pimple that is this festering fucking pimple that is the Pelicans fandom that you and I just happen to have the worst case of. But yeah, when I talk to a lot of fans with basketball knowledge that aren't peddling podcasts or aren't fishing for Twitter likes, man, like, the overall sentiment is very positive.
Yeah.
The overall sentiment.
I'm surprised by the level-headedness I've seen from some people.
Yeah.
I was.
And this is coming from people that I know personally, mm-hmm. and I don't want to be too anecdotal here, but I really trust the opinions of these guys that have called it pretty straightforward the last few years. Like, they didn't like the Alvin Gentry signing, the people that I'm talking about. Quite a few of them were weary about Stan Van Gundy, and a lot of them really like the Willie Green signing. And a lot of them have been, have been pretty correct on a lot of the moves we made too, man. Like, being excited over the CJ trade and really thinking BI was the best piece in the AD trade. Like, I don't know, a lot of really positive things are coming out this Pelicans fan base. So just because there's a huge negative air on some of the smaller media members in the Pelicans world right now doesn't mean that the overall sentiment from our fan base is negative.
Yeah, and just because your source is Fletcher Mackel doesn't mean Jack. Nah.
Yeah, I mean, if anybody's peddling their brand, it's Fletcher Mackel. I mean, Jesus Christ, that dude will do anything, man. He'll throw some... I mean, he'll get on his knees real quick for like 1,000 retweets. Well, I know for a fact.
So to bring it back to the team, and I mean, I think,
let's switch the subject after that.
Don't get me started. You know who I name at, but
I got you.
Like, I mean, David Griffin, I guarantee you asked him, he probably cut off his right foot to get 82 game season out of Zion and BI.
I agree. I think so, man.
I'm sure he's doing everything in his power, and I'm sure he's going to continue to try and look at that and see what he can do to fix it. I mean, he's not stupid. We can say what we want about David Griffin. Like, you know, he's fake. He's a salesman, whatever the hell. He's not stupid. That's one thing you got to say. I mean, he did some shit with a draft pick last year that was – not only was it a gamble, but it was super smart, and it was so smart, Portland did the same to another team in this trade.
Good call.
He's making trades that other teams are making the year after. You know, you can't call that guy dumb. I'm sorry. But no matter how you feel about it. But, like, with the trade deadline, how could he realistically make an impactful move? Like, I know people are, like, mad. One, we couldn't have got Kevin Durant. Go read anything about that situation. Kevin Durant was only going to Phoenix, and he's had his eye on Phoenix since offseason.
They said that in the offseason. That was very obvious. Yeah,
so
okay.
Anybody complaining about, we have a shot at Schmidt Dua. We have a shot at Kevin Durant. You never did. You never were going to. There was no point in arguing about that. I mean, maybe Brooklyn trades him to us. So what? Kevin Durant can just not play? Like, awesome.
Right.
Yeah, we're already doing that. Why, you know? That's a whole different conversation, but why would David Griffin make a trade right now when he hasn't seen the team? And maybe he never will, and that's, again, when we have to have that conversation later, but why trade for somebody like OG Anunoby when he doesn't even know what BI and Zion look like together? And when he has seen just Zion healthy, the team's been incredible.
Right.
Why and give up all these assets when you may not need it?
Now, here's the deal, right? Like, so I really feel for those people who think that we're waiting for health and we don't want to play that game. Because, like you and I said, every year it seems like we're waiting for health.
And that's a fair, that's fair.
That's fair. That's like the very fair statement. Yep. But to me, like, I just don't want to overreact until there is a fair chance with Zion and BI. Now, but with that said, you have to draw the line somewhere, Tyler. And I think next season's probably the line, right? Like, we got a taste of it this year. The fans are ready. We know the players we have here work well together. All we're doing is sitting and waiting for Zion and BI now. And I think they have one more season with that before we potentially start looking at maybe other options. Yeah. And the only reason I say that is because, man, at some point you have to call a spade a spade. Like, if you're never going to see these guys on the court together, and it's been, what, 4 years now, and they barely played any percentage of their games together, that's tough. Now, the only reason I say that is because after next year, Brandon Ingram becomes an expiring contract, and you really have to decide if you're going to sign him or not. And if he's constantly hurt and this experiment's failing and you think it's failing, I'd hate to trade a 26-year-old All-Star, but a 26-year-old All-Star on an expiring contract is going to get a pretty big return. I don't think we should trade Brandon Ingram. I don't. I'm just saying.
Nah, bro, Danny Granger.
I'd understand if we were exploring options because this experiment keeps on failing due to health.
Yeah.
Like, at some point, you do have to draw the line. I don't think it's right now because I think this team is constructed really well. And I'm excited to see, man. I mean, by all indications, Zion's going to be back right after the All-Star break, or very quickly after the All-Star break, and we have the easiest strength of schedule out of any team competing for the playoffs. So what is it, 28th strength of schedule out of 30? So, yeah, I think we're very poised to make a run, and I think it's very important that Brandon Ingram, Zion, CJ, Jonas, Herb, Trey, all these guys get significant amount of minutes together after the All-Star break.
And look, and we're going to talk about like what we consider looking on it for this season, but that, I think I've been pretty consistent since day one we've been doing the podcast on this season, was I just want to see Zion and BI together. And
we've said that since day one. Yeah, you've said that since day one.
That's just what I wanted. And, you know, I was really mad. I was a lot more mad than a lot of other people were at the beginning of the season, and not because we were hovering around 500 or whatever, but – I saw the wasted potential that the way Zion was being used with BI, and it was crushing my soul. And it took BI going out for Willie to finally realize, hey, this is how Zion's supposed to be. This is the guy. So hopefully now Willie knows that with Zion coming in, we don't have to go through that growing pain again. Give Zion the ball. Let CJ and BI play off ball. Because, see, here all of a sudden we talk about we need shooting. Well, from David Griffin's point of view, if he can get a healthy – and, again, that's a fair thing. Like, who knows if BI is going to stay healthy for the rest of the season or not. But if he can't get healthy, I mean, you got CJ and BI practically 40% spot-up shooters, catch-and-shoot guys.
I think both of them. I think advanced numbers, they're both catch-and-shoot.
Catch-and-shoot, they're deadly. Trey Murphy, same thing. And I mean, you've seen Trey and Zion's chemistry together,
right?
I mean, so all of a sudden you have shooting around Zion, you know, like,
yeah. And I mean, shoot, Trey and Brandon, I'm just looking at the numbers right now. Trey and Brandon are shooting 40 from 3-point in general.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, and not just catch and shoot. So I'd best believe they're over 40% from catch and shoot.
And I mean, Najee's been a lot better catch and shoot this season.
He has been.
So really, I mean, you're looking at Herb Jones, Dyson, are really your only weak spots at the three-point line, and you're not going to have 10, 40% three-point shooters unless you're Boston, or I guess. But yeah.
I know. So
why overpay when, okay, hey, let's try, let me try one more season and get this team healthy. Because right now the market, you can definitely say, is It's definitely not in a good place. It's the housing market right now in the NBA as far as trades go. I mean, Kevin Durant didn't want to be there. He only had one spot he was going to go, and Phoenix still gave up their defense practically and a really talented young player for unprotected first-round picks on top of it. Like, you know, it is Kevin Durant, so that's fair. But, like, man, that Rudy Gobert trade and
– I know. It's just – if the trade market really just seems – it just feels weird,
I
mean, man.
I'm not going to lie. If we would have traded three first-rounders and Trey Murphy and Dyson Daniels for OG Anunoby, I would have been pissed.
And here's the deal, right?
Maybe Dyson Daniels and Trey never become what OG Anunoby is, but I've seen enough of OG where I can tell you he ain't worth that by any stretch of the imagination.
And here's the deal, too, Tyler, right? Like, guys that we wanted that – are supposedly going to make a difference on this team, right?
Yep.
Like OG Anunoby and Mikal Bridges are like the two big ones that come to mind. It took Kevin Durant to get Mikal Bridges. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It took a Kevin Durant type of trade to get Mikal Bridges. And on top of that, Memphis offered four first round picks for Mikal Bridges, and Brooklyn was like, nah, we good. And that makes me believe that they probably offered the same for OG Anunoby because they were one of the rumored teams that were really interested in him. So you got to think, if they're turning down four first-round picks, whoever pays more than that's probably going to look foolish.
That's crazy. That's you're going all in at that point. You have no backup plan at that point. Like that.
Yeah. The smarter thing
OG
to do.
OG Anunoby is not the guy to go, hey, all in button, we're pressing it. That is not the guy.
Mikal's a different story.
Probably.
Yeah, I'm a little upset. I'm a little upset we didn't get him because.
But nobody got him. So he
right, nobody out. Got him. So, like, I was salivating at the idea that Mikal Bridges, because we had some of our guys tweet about it. All of a sudden, I'm like, oh, shit, is he available? Clearly, he wasn't. Right, like clearly he was not available.
Thank God Memphis didn't get him.
I know Memphis was going after him hard. You know, the Knicks were going after a couple of people hard as well. Also, clearly Toronto was not selling unless the deal was ridiculous. So Toronto, I think, was just kind of gauging what type of team they had based off of other GMs. And they were like, well, damn, we have a pretty good team. Let's stick together. And I imagine that's something the Pelicans would do too, right? Like if the Pelicans were like, look, we're having a fire sale and all the GMs call us up about our players, we'd probably get offered crazy packages too. And the Pelicans would take away from that, shit, we have a pretty fucking good team. If all these people want all these players on our team and they're willing to pay the price. So I think Toronto was kind of flirting with that a little bit. But no, Tyler, like what you said was absolutely right. Why cash in right now if we don't necessarily know what we need, right? Like, we haven't seen Zion and Brandon Ingram and CJ together.
Because the way me and you see it, right, it's either we see that together or we never see that together because of injuries, and then it's time to have a different conversation.
Right, right.
You don't make that move. You either know one way or the other, and then you make a move, whichever move consolidates whichever one we know. So if we know BI and Zion are working together, they're freaking great, but we just need that one last piece, like, and that'll definitely put us over the top. We're in final contention barring anything crazy like a major injury happen or something like that. Then you make the move, you know. But until he sees that, why would he invest everything? Because, you know, it could quickly be like BI, you know, they get hurt, we go all in, we're just constantly middle of the road and we're the Clippers. Next thing we know, BI is not happy, he's gone, and then like we have to try and build around Zion with not much to work with because we don't have picks until 2029, you know. Like,
right,
it's not worth it. It's not. And we do have extra first round picks, we do have a war chest of stuff, you know. But there's no reason to go all in just yet. I know David Griffin would like to go all in. There's no way he wants to draft 25 players. I'm sure he wants to keep some picks. He probably likes that nature of New Orleans compared to Cleveland, where he can actually draft and develop players. But I know he knows if he's going to win, he can't continue to rely on that. So he will cash him in, but there was no reason to cash him in this deadline. There was no reason. There was nobody available either. Like, OG Anunoby's not the move. Wasn't the move.
Nah, I agree, man. I feel like the big trade that we think we need is going to be a lot smaller than what people think.
Yeah, I mean, it could be as simple as shooting, rim protection, anything like that. But, you know, and me and you talked about it way beforehand, 2 months ago. Rim protection and shooting was our trade deadline needs. Which of those guys that would be classified in that regard was even moved at the deadline? Like,
right.
There really wasn't nothing really moved. I mean, like Sadiq Bey, you know, he might not even go anywhere.
I know, like it might not even happen.
Beasley going to the Lakers, but like, you know, he's got the defensive tissue paper.
Yeah. Like, and I mean, you know, he has a little bit of the off-court issues with some things that were rumored with him.
Your rib protector was oh my gosh, why is he slipping?
I mean, Nick Claxton Orlando. Was the idea. Oh, Mo Bamba was another one.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just think that I don't know, man. I think that if we do make trades, man, I think it's, like I said, I think it's going to be on like the smaller ends to kind of put us over the top, because so much relies on Zion and Brandon Ingram. So I think best case scenario is,
and it's easier Zion to make those impactful trades in the offseason.
Right. Yeah. I don't know, man. I just think, you know, like I'm looking at a team, you know, I'm looking at a team like Boston, right? Boston made the Derek White trade and the Malcolm Brogdon. Like, I'm thinking like those type of trades are closer to what we're looking at that's going to put this team over the edge than, let's say, a send 4 first round picks and a pick swap and a young player and go get a big piece. I think the big pieces are here is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, in my opinion, Jonathan, I think you're right, because I think what needs to be replaced is guys that shore up the weaknesses in a playoff stretch, because that's what me and you talk about. Like, if this team is going to be a finals contender, what is that 9-10 man rotation that's going to push right all the way there? You know, mm-hmm. And who's really the weakness in that 9-10 rotation? I think we have a good 9-10 rotation right now. But maybe you look at go like, okay, Jonas right now, you know, might not be the guy we can ride with in the playoffs. And, mm-hmm. And that's a different debate. I think you could go right now either way with that. And we talked about that, so no need to go too in detail. But, like, it's really piling that out, getting rid of dead weight like Hayes, you know. And, you know, I heard people complain about getting rid of Hayes at the deadline. Well, you're not going to keep unloading assets just to get rid of players. Like, one of the reasons to get rid of Devontae Graham, and I don't know if you want to talk about this next, but, you know, for the reason they got rid of Devontae Graham was different, but you don't just get rid of Hayes and, like, you know, if he's that invaluable where a team's like, no, you got to give me something for me to take this dude, then just keep him. Like, yeah. he's not in the play. He's not in our main rotation. He's not in our 10-man rotation. Just keep him. And I've heard the same argument done for Graham, but it's a little different for Graham, and we can discuss why later.
Yeah, I mean, so, like, overall, the trade – I'm sorry, dude, fuck, I'm getting tired. It's the dad.
dad in me, bro. Good Lord.
Fuck, I go to bed, you know. Shit, we're recording this at 10 p.m. That's past my bedtime. But anyway, yeah, man, like, overall, with the trade deadline, I mean – I came away a little bit disappointed because I wanted more to happen. Like, I did. I think I was still a little bit caught up with the losses, and I want everything now, right? Like, I want it all. As a fan base, like, you want it all. You want these big splash moves. There were a lot of hot ticket names on the deadline. It did look like a lot of teams did get better, you know? Like, the Lakers, I think, definitely got better. Portland definitely got – I mean, oh, I'm sorry. Phoenix definitely got better. So yeah, you want the Pelicans to get in that mix, but what you don't want to do is you don't want to get in the mix just to get in the mix. And I think what a lot of fans were calling for, just, it felt very, like I said, myopic. It felt very short-sighted. It felt very, it felt like there was a lot of sophistries when they were talking about why the Pelicans should do what they need to do. So no, I mean, I'm perfectly content with riding this wave out. I think there's a lot of good vibes around this team, and, yeah, but you're right, Tyler. We did make one trade. What did somebody on Twitter post, this asshole? fuck. I'll look it up. But anyway, we did trade we did trade Devontae Graham to the Spurs in return for Josh Richardson, which feels more like a cost-saving move, I guess you'd say.
Okay, so that's what I'll talk about.
Yeah.
Was it a cost-saving move? Probably. But here's the thing. Devontae Graham was getting paid $11 million a year. I'm not a cap guy, so somewhere around there, right? He was god-awful. If there was one victory I wanted out of this trade deadline, it was getting rid of Devontae Graham. I don't care what he's doing with the Spurs now. I don't care what it is. He had plenty of opportunity and chances and minutes to do anything here, and he flat out failed with a big fat ass F. Like, straight up. Nothing against the guy. Cool guy. He was terrible. He needed to go as soon as possible. He single-handedly, and I am not joking on this, you can go look up the numbers, he single-handedly tanked our guard numbers and our bench units. Single-handedly. He took what is the strength of this team, and he destroyed it. So, yeah. And, you know, Willie was going to continue to play him, you know, because he likes him. But to be honest, he had to be forced to play Kyra. And I think if we don't have a healthy Kyra, they might have to keep him just because our depth at the point guard position is so light. At the guard position in general, we're very wing heavy. And maybe that's a conversation we can have in the offseason about something that the team needs to address. I know Jesse said that, but maybe we need to look at the guard position just a little more. You know, Jose, we kind of see where his limits are. But anyway, yeah, was it cost-saving? Sure, but it's cost-saving in the fact that, like, he sucked. We're not going to continue to pay this guy $11 million a year. Here you go, Spurs. Here's your tank driver.
Right, I think that's right. He's just chucking up shots. Dude.
Like, and look, and they talk about like, oh, you know, Josh Richardson or whatever. Like, dude, that guy's a good player. People don't watch him because I've seen somebody go like, oh, you know, he shoots 35% from three on five attempts per game. Like, what is that? What, we don't need that. It's like, bro, he is the perfect kind of guy to play off the bench in a Willie style system. Easily switchable defender. He can score, believe it or not. Like, yeah, he's not like a tremendous three-point shooter. But, again, we already talked about how we weren't going to get those. This dude is a good 10th, 11th man. They're like, well, he's going to take away minutes from the young guys. What young guy? What young guy is he going to take minutes away from? Dyson?
Right.
Maybe. Dyson right now, some days on the floor, he can't give you offense. I promise you Richardson can give you offense. So I'll take that. He could take minutes. We're trying to win, you know?
Yeah.
Like, this isn't a tanking team where I care who, what young guy's getting minutes and what young guy's not getting minutes. I'll take up for Dyson and Trey and them, but if somebody's outplaying you, they belong.
I read the Spurs article on the trade from one of their writers. I think he was from like the Locked On Spurs or whatever. And the most telling thing about his assessment of that was that Graham helps the tank. So that just goes to tell you everything I think about Graham. Sure, Graham can go up and he shot 23s his first two nights with the Spurs. Cool. They are tanking. They're not trying to win. I love Graham. I love what he did for us. He's a great locker room guy.
That first game was go look at the players on the floor. It was a G League game. He was the best player on the floor.
Yeah, I mean, he was playing. Who were they playing? Was it Houston?
Yeah, well, no, they were playing Detroit, and it was Detroit. Like, that's what it was. A battle for the tank. They're both 14-41, and like the Spurs sat everybody.
Yeah, it
Detroit
was so
was trying to blow it. It was.
It
bad,
was so dude. Bad, and it was a ridiculous game, and I think the Spurs ended up losing like a heartbreaker. Or maybe they lose and they're triumphant in their loss because the tank is continuing. I don't know. But anyway, dude, Devontae Graham wasn't just helping. Nobody, he wasn't helping this team. And I know a lot of people were saying things like, I don't know. We could keep a track of all the shitty things that were on Twitter.
Well, one I heard was chemistry. I don't care. He sucks. I saw Zion. I was at the game. I was right behind the Pelicans bench yesterday. You know who Zion was talking to the whole time?
Who?
Jackson Hayes. You want Jackson Hayes to stick around?
Yeah,
chemistry?
He's gone.
You know, like, dude, fuck chemistry. They're pros. They don't care. They're all rich. They want to hang out. They can hang out whenever. They see them on the road all the time if they're still in the NBA. Like, this is the NBA. Nobody cares that much. You know, like that. Yeah, I hate that fucking argument.
Look how good of friends Larry Nance and Josh Hart still are.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And they played. They haven't been on the same team since they were on the Lakers.
Josh Hart went to the Knicks and he's stoked.
Yeah.
Like, and he was stoked on the Blazers and he was stoked being on the Pelicans. Like, the guys understand. Like, if you're not a top 15 guy, you're probably getting traded at some point. Mm-hmm. And even a top 15
guy gets
traded. And
listen, I've been a guy that argues about chemistry a lot. But at the end of the day, like, that chemistry has to come from the top down. Like, I'm
not
worried about
where was the chemistry showing on the court when Devontae Graham was out there?
Right. Exactly right. Exactly right. Okay, yeah, the mood's set, but we're losing 10 in a row.
Great. They all smile at practice. Devontae Graham's missed his 4-3 wide open.
Dude.
Awesome.
Side note, speaking of loudmouths on Twitter, Cheddar on Twitter just said that the Lakers would beat the Pelicans in a 7-game series in 6.
Yeah, I'm sure they would. Yeah, okay. That's another nice talking point that I've seen is that the Lakers roster is suddenly tight. Like, they're so good now. They're so good. We'll see. We'll see.
Wow.
We'll see what happens.
I gotta keep the receipts. Anyway, moving on to our next topic, Tyler. Zion should be back, if not immediately after the All-Star break, pretty quickly.
I saw him at the game. He was walking around, no hobbling. Like, he was laughing, just talking shit to a fan wearing an Evan Mobley shirt behind him. Like, lingering movements or nothing like that. I think
he's working out, man. We just got to get to that practice
he
point.
Looked, yeah, he looks in good shape and everything like that. So
he's definitely working out. But so there's two things I want to talk about towards the end of this episode, Tyler. One is after the All-Star break. We mentioned it already. We have a ridiculously easy schedule. But what do we think needs to happen the second half of the season to consider this season a successful one? And I know I kind of want to compare it to what we said at the beginning of the season. So you, Jesse, and I were kind of in agreement. To be a successful season, we all thought that we had to avoid the play-in. And we would think that was a successful season, whether we won a playoff series or not. It feels a little different now. It feels a little bit different. I still don't care as much about avoiding the play-in. And I feel like I care a lot more about winning a playoff series than I did at the beginning of the season.
Yeah. Yeah. My priorities have just become like, just give me health. That's it. Let me see the product, you know, whatever it is. It's bad. I'll be okay. Cause at least I know. It's the not knowing that kills me at this point. But to be honest, I think if Zion and B.I. play healthy, this is where my optimism will come in. You can say what you want. Like, Lakers are better, whatever. Good luck. They got to go, like, I don't know, 13-9 or something like that just to even make the play-in. So, yeah, we'll see them in a 6-game series, I'm sure. If Zion and B.I. come back, I really think they make a hard push for 5 or 4. I think they can realistically avoid the play-in. I don't think that's a long shot either. I think the West is still really jumbled up. I don't think any, you know, despite what Zach Lowe or something like that will tell you, I don't think there's any real top dog in the West. I think Denver's scary. But here's the thing. Right now with the West, if you look at the overall picture, there's one thing missing from most of these teams. And that's defense, dude.
Mm-hmm.
It's gutted. Like, Lakers defense, Phoenix, shit, even Golden State, especially if Gary Payton's not going to play. I mean, Clay's looked better lately, but he's still not the same defender he was. But, I mean, Denver, who, you know, go down the list. None of these teams have any kind of impactful defenders anymore. They're going to need to rely on their best players to actually play defense to get stops. You know, you look at Phoenix, and it's going to be, you know, they're really going to have to lean on Kevin Durant, Chris Paul, Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton. Like, you know, Chris Paul used to be that. He's not that anymore. DeAndre Ayton, I guess, you know. But Memphis and New Orleans are the only teams where I'm still seeing, like, okay, you know, if they want to shut you down one night and be real active, deflections, turnovers, transition buckets, those are the two teams in the West that can still do it. So, you know, if I'm going to be honest, I think Memphis will start to slowly get it together. I think Denver still ebbs up with the one seed, but I think we have a good chance to push for three or four.
And yeah, and
probably
I think
go for five.
Here's the a lot is riding on these last 20 or so games of the season, but man, I really like our chances in a 7-game series against anybody.
If Zion's on the court, I do.
1,000. So if Zion, B.I., C.J., J.B., if they're on the court, I like our chances against anybody.
Our only real playoff struggle, I think, is teams with, like, immense length.
Right.
I think that's our only
concern. We've seen that with Utah. So, I mean, you might potentially see that in the playoffs, especially against a team like Memphis if we end up facing them.
That's our bad matchup.
Yeah. But, no, man, I agree. I think that we are a really good team. I think that's very easy to say. I'm not gonna agree with Cheddar here, Cheddar Chaz, that the Lakers would beat us and Utah would beat us in a 7-game series. He just said that. But anyway, I really think that as a healthy team with all of us on the court, dude, I really like our chances against any team. But here's the thing, Tyler. Like, winning or losing in a regular season matters because of this. Because as much as I like our matchups, I like our matchups a lot better if we were playing a team, you know, if we were playing a team like the Timberwolves in the first round, or if we were playing a team like the Thunder in the first round, or if we were playing a team like the Clippers in the first round. So, like, if we were avoiding teams like the Suns, if we were avoiding teams like the Grizzlies and the Nuggets, like, if we were avoiding them in the first round, that's better for us. Like, I feel a lot more comfortable about that. So that's why these wins matter so much, man. And that's why it hurts to go through a 10-game losing streak like that, because, you know, realistically, the Pelicans could potentially face one of these harder teams in the first round that do have a lot of consistency and do have a lot of continuity, where the Pelicans don't have that due to injuries. So although I do like our chances in a 7-game series against anybody, I'd be feeling a lot better if the Pelicans were up there where I think they should be. And I think they should be the 3 seed. That's exactly where I think they should be. I think Memphis and Denver got off to a big enough lead, but even Memphis not playing great, right? They went, you know, what are they, like 3-9 in their last 12 games, I believe, if I saw that correctly. So, you know, I think the Pelicans are good enough to be the number 2 seed in the West. And we give Denver trouble when we play them. Every time we play them with Zion, we give them trouble. So, man, I like our chances in a 7-game series. I just wish that this regular season went a little bit more smoothly, or it picks up and just absolutely kicks ass in the last third of the games or so, when we jump up to potentially that 3 seed, potentially that 4 seed, where we're avoiding teams like the Suns or teams like the Nuggets in Memphis that first round.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, that's kind of where I would lie on as far as how it would all break out. I think teams you have to keep an eye out for potentially is Minnesota started to stabilize a little bit. You know, Clippers, maybe. I don't really have faith in them this season, but you never know. But to your point, if we can really kind of hammer in this last stretch, I mean, this last stretch was – we had just made the CJ trade, and we went on, you know, that great 4-0. I think we went 0-4, and then we went 4-0 after that, or 6-0 after
yeah.
that. And we started just consistently winning and pushed ourselves into the play-in. Like, that was what made last season, you know, kind of special. And that was, you know, that last little back half stretch. This could be that plus some. So I wouldn't
yeah.
be pessimistic about the team. I think where me and you lie is just we want to just see him healthy, and we'll take whatever result we get at that point. You know, I don't think any of us were expecting them to compete this year. I think, like, compete as far as finals go, but I think we see the ceilings there, and that's where the frustration comes in.
Mm-hmm.
But if we could just see him healthy and dominate, and, you know, we lose out in the second round, six games to Dallas, we'll be pissed at that point. But, you know, I'll look back and be like, yeah, that's what I was looking for. Okay, I'm feeling good going into this next season.
I just, like, I also want to, you know, I still want to avoid the play-in, though. I know I said I don't care about that as much.
I want to avoid the play-in just because I don't want the off chance that I somehow lose to the Lakers and I have to just stay off Twitter for 6 months.
Right.
That's my luck.
I want that very minimum, that six seed, which felt like such an easy goal, man, a month ago, right, Tyler? But yeah, I want that six seed. We can get greedy and say we want the three seed, but at all costs, man. I mean,
I think
we have to get it
because our strength of schedule. Not only is our strength of schedule easy as far as competition, but the same competition that we're playing are really going to start to tank it in. And remember, this is Wembanyama season.
Yeah,
teams
you're right.
Teams are really going to start to pull out the stops.
Like, right, we got to play Houston. We got to play San Antonio.
We could even start resting players some games, but losing to those teams should be unexcusable close to the end of the season. So.
We played, two games against Houston. We play San Antonio. We play Charlotte. I think we have another game against the Lakers, which is going to be a tough game. But anyway, we do have an easy schedule, and I would see the season as a failure if we don't get a playoff series, whether that be missing the play-in, which
if we miss,
I don't know, or if we lose the play-in game or the play-in games, we might have to play two to lose two. But
regardless of injuries that happen too, so Zion or whatever, like if we didn't make the play-in and get
into
the playoffs at all, I'd be disappointed.
We need a playoff series. We need that 100%. So with that in mind, man, I think that's all we have to cover this week, unless you want to throw something else in, Tyler. It's been a while since we recorded. I know it's going to be hard for us to record. Our boy Jesse he has to work the parades these 2 weeks.
Yeah, quit saying you know basketball when you don't. That's my thing.
Yeah. And I mean, like humility breeds leadership,
man. Dude, I wouldn't care if he came out with the takes, right? Like, everybody's entitled to their opinion and perspective, whatever. But when you sit there and go like, oh, all Pelicans fans told me all year is this, and now look at me. Like, I'm smart because B.I. is a piece of shit. Like, dude. Oh, my God. it's like they got their script right out of First Take. It's terrible.
I know, man. It's so bad. And it just bugs me.
We didn't talk about this one real quick, but like the fact that this could end up being a valid concern, but to straight out say it like it's a fact that our team is cheap doesn't sit right with me, because we talked about like if they were that cheap, how are they giving the extensions they give to CJ and Larry? You know, it fits within the salary, because we're talking about they don't want to go into luxury tax. I just listened to Christian Clark's most recent pod, which is a good one if anybody wants to check it out. He's pretty much got it from his sources. They will dip into the luxury tax, but they're going to dip in when they know what this team is and they know they're going to compete, which is fair.
Yeah,
and
I mean, dude,
the way it should be. To straight out call this team cheap or not willing to compete or not make the moves just because you didn't make a trade at the deadline is really, really unprofessional, in my opinion, especially if you're a credentialed reporter. But that's just my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, it's a solid opinion, man. We don't know what this team is, but you're trying to fix it. Doesn't make sense. You can't diagnose it, right? You don't cut somebody open without having a plan first. So we're not going to gut this team without having a plan first. I mean, we got to see what this team's about. We know what a few of these players are about, but as a cohesive team, we have a lot of questions to answer. So let's just pray to whomever you pray to, knock on wood, whatever you need to do to make sure that this team's healthy this last third or so of this season, because it's going to be huge, I think, for the future of this franchise.
I think it'll be big. I think we're going to come back 2 weeks from now, we're going to be like, holy shit. It's going to be like, we're going to be back in that mode that we were after Phoenix.
Want the Pelicans to pop out of the ground like that Last of Us episode.
Dude, remember that run we went on in Zion's rookie season? We were legit looking like one of the best teams in the league.
Yeah, I remember that.
And that was an Alvin Gentry shell of a team.
I know.
Around Zion. Like, His team could be incredible, and we didn't talk about him much. It was my last quick side note. I'm not going to go off on a spiel, but I think Trey Murphy's going to be incredible.
I was about to say that, man. So, like, a lot of people were posting Mikal Bridges' stats and, like, all these things he were doing, and I'm like, man, Trey Murphy's had, like, three or four better games than that the past
two weeks.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so.
I saw people getting on his defense, like, last night. Okay, second-year player. Yeah, he's not Herb Jones. All
right. Right.
I don't care. He looks incredible. I
think he looks great. His confidence is there. Clearly, they're telling him to shoot the ball a lot more, too, you know?
I mean, especially when you go look at, yeah, we're such a terrible front office, yet they made a trade for a guy who's, you know, constantly contributing in victories as a big-time player for us. And Zaire Williams, you know, the guy
G
Memphis
League.
Traded up to, just went to the G League. Nah, yeah. Draft picks say it all. We're terrible.
Yeah. We got a potential 50-40-90 guy.
Well, he is a 50-40-90 guy.
He's right very now. Close. He's very close. His field goal percentage is under 50, but he's very close. He's shooting over 90% from the free throw line. He's shooting 40% from deep. So, yeah, I mean, the month of February alone, he's shooting 47% from deep. So, we got something special with Trey Murphy, and I think we need to stick with him. And I think he's going to reward us for that loyalty. So, with that said, I'm happy that this podcast has been loyal to each other, and we record once in a
blue moon
every Olympics. It feels like we record, but no, man, it's been fun, and
sponsored
hopefully we'll check in. Yeah, hopefully we check in again after the All-Star break, and what we're saying comes true. We'll see, but I'll see you then.
All right,
later.